This is the Soil Sense podcast, where we believe that building healthier soils is not just a prescription, but rather a pursuit. It's a journey that requires collaboration, curiosity, and communication among farmers, researchers, agronomists, consultants, and extension. You're going to hear their stories and discover how and why they're working together to make sense out of what's happening in the soil. Hey there, welcome back to another episode of Soil Sense. I'm your host, Tim Hamrich. Now, as you know, on this season of the podcast, we've been featuring several interviews that we recorded at Agronomy on Ice in Devil's Lake, North Dakota back in February. And one of the amazing things about that event is that it attracts people in the ag community from all over and from all different ag operations. Of course, all over North Dakota, but also from other states as well. So today we feature someone who traveled over from West Central Minnesota. Brett Blackwelder farms with his dad and brother in Chicago, Minnesota. Together they have a 320-cow dairy and about 2,700 acres of cropland. Now, Brett mostly focuses on the dairy part of the operation, and his dad and brother focus primarily on the crop side. And when it comes to dairying, Brett said years ago they knew they needed to either get bigger or get automated or get out, and they chose to embrace robots. A big part of Brett's job is managing the automation part of their operation. At Agronomy on Ice, Abby and I talked with Brett about his views on soil health, the relationship between the row crop side of their operation and the dairy, and how they've managed the transition to using robots on the farm. First and foremost, though, we asked him what led him personally to becoming so interested in soil health.
You just see stuff on the internet about how we're wrecking soils, especially on the dairy side when silage, we don't have any cover in the fall, and seeing firsthand soil blowing like crazy the way it was. So it's like, I wanted to at least try to do something on our wheat ground if possible and the silage ground to just do something, because it just blows so bad out here, or where in West Central Minnesota, so flat and windy like here in North Dakota. So it can be a pretty big mess. So we've had a couple different, I wouldn't say failures, but learning experiences. And then last fall, we had a good run. Airplane spread cereal rye into our standing corn silage. Month later, we chopped it. It was about 4 inches tall at that time, and then it took off all fall and spring. So, and then we no-tilled into it this spring. It had its moment, its challenges and learning experiences, but the beans did our farm average, and they were planted into drier conditions on part of the field that was pattern tiled. So we were worried about drought stress, and they did actually, yeah, like I said, field farm average for us this year. So for being a learning experience and not going perfect, we're very happy with that.
Yeah, so that was the first year you've tried that?
Yeah, so we've tried it in the past with the airplane, and the seed hasn't germinated because of no rain or too much rain. Last year was just like the perfect fall for it, and then the spring with all the rains, it got timed out. Didn't plant those beans till June. It was 6 feet tall. I mean, it was. I got pictures. It's pretty crazy how tall of rye we were planting into.
Yeah, he sent me pictures on Twitter, so yeah, I got to see it.
It was quite nuts having deer running up in front of the planter and such like that. So.
So you're relieved when you got in the combine and you could see that it was, you know, farm average.
Yeah, exactly. No, we weren't expecting that because of the dry year. We just didn't know what the rye was going to take away. Like, the beans looked fine. They were shorter than what we expected. We just didn't know. So we didn't do any cover crops this year because we're like, what's going to happen here? But field average is like, well, it's caught our attention again. Yeah. So I do think we'll maybe just go about planting it differently next time. Maybe just go drill right after silage. And then I have a neighbor who has a strip-till machine. And I think I will have him go out and make strips in it once it's germinated a little ways. Just because we have such heavy black soils where we're at, that this spring I noticed the 130 acres that was rye, we planted 110 of it, fine. And there was 20 acres we had to wait a week for it to dry out more. Even though the rye was in there nice and thick, it just was not enough to take the moisture out of the soil. So we think if we strip it so the soil gets that sunlight, that'll be a huge improvement is what we're thinking.
So then you get both the evaporation from the sunlight and the benefit from the cover crop.
Yes,
as well.
And, yeah. And the challenge with this field too is, so 50 acres of it my dad owns, and it's pattern tiled. And the other 70, some of it is just tile in the bottoms. So I think too, if we do this again, it'll be all the same drainage. So either no tile, tile just in the bottoms, or pattern tile. I think that was a big hindrance because the 50 acres that was pattern tiled was ready in May. It was just so dry between the rye and the tile. So we could have literally went and planted that 50 acres when we were all set up for corn. We really didn't want to go do corn into it, but that would be another aspect we look at it as to what is the drainage situation and make sure it's all uniform. that's kind of where we got into a little trouble with it a little bit as it got out of our control there a little bit. So.
How were you able to convince your brother and dad to try this?
We do notice the soil blowing, and we want to try to do something. We don't need to go crazy. Like, maybe someday we'll do more cover crops into the regular field corn, but we just kind of want to not master this silage part, but we got to do something just to make ourselves feel like good stewards and everything. So we've had good luck no-tilling corn into dead alfalfa. We have alfalfa for the dairy, obviously. And so that's kind of what got us peaked, more interested in it. It was that went really well for us. And it's just like, well, let's just try to do more things to keep learning. Like, we're all lifelong learners, is how I would put it. We want to keep learning. And, you know, not saying grain farming is boring, but dairy is really, really difficult. And grain farming can be the same thing over and over. So it's like adding another management system into it to make it a little more challenging is kind of interesting to me.
Yeah, that's really cool. So this year you weren't able to get the cover crop in, but for next year you think you're just going to drill it after you...
We'll do something, if whether we float it on and lightly chisel it in or something to that effect. We're just going to wait till the silage corn is off, is what I'm thinking, and probably do the strip till rig like I thought. So we'll see. We got to talk it over a little bit more. We haven't talked about it for a while, but I think in the future we'll still make an attempt. We just got to do something, is how we keep telling ourselves that.
Yeah. I'm just trying to picture, how were you feeling when you were trying to plant those soybeans into that rye that was so tall? I just, like, you had to have been thinking, oh, crap. Like, I don't know. Were you worried at that point? You were pretty confident it would work.
I was extremely worried just because the root mass was so thick. We have precision planting meters, but we don't have Delta Force or clean sweep. So I was a little worried about that, being our planter wasn't tricked out like some other people's as to getting proper depth and stuff like that. But I think for the most part, it went well. We had some soybeans on the top, but mostly we just had a lot of neighbors driving around watching us when it was happening. We looked pretty silly out there, but the killing of the rye went really well. And other than that 20 acres that we had to plant at a later date, I think the one thing that we caught ourselves is the packing wheels. We just had clips in it. Those were falling out, and our packing wheels were falling off, and the spacers. So then we had to go get cotter keys to keep them in there, because those clips were just getting caught by the rye and pulled out. So once we put the cotter keys in there, everything went quite a bit smoother then too. So yeah,
that's a hot tip.
Yes, that's one that hopefully people pay attention to, because that's probably something a lot of people haven't been down that road.
Yeah, so I rode on the planter for most of it. Good thing it's a 24 row planter, so we get a lot done with it. But we, like, you would notice a packing wheel from time to time mudding up, and so we'd stop and clean it out. But it was just strictly, it wasn't in the whole field. It was just in the bottoms that weren't drying out quite properly. But in the dry parts of the field, I sat on Twitter. I mean, but we got to the part that wasn't pattern tiled, I was attention again. Yeah.
Well, do you think from a soil health perspective, is it easier or more difficult to have both the dairy and the row crop operation kind of integrated?
I think it's easier because, like, we take off wheat for straw, we need the bedding, then we have the silage ground. So we have different times when we're harvesting, so we have more opportunities to plant some and do things differently. We obviously have plenty of work the way it is, but it gives us more opportunities to get in there and do these type of things.
So what's it like working with robots, as even row crop agriculture sees more like automation opportunities? It's going to be a skill set more people have to develop. So from you now, 8 years working with robots?
Yeah, we're getting on 7.5.
Seven and a half years?
Yeah.
So what's been the lessons from that?
You need to learn electrical, and that's not my strong suit. And then, well, you know, dairymen already know what vacuum is and that type of stuff. It's a parlor, but you just have to relearn how things work. So I was already good with computers, so I mean, that wasn't a problem. It was more just, what does this alarm mean when you get a call? Sort of things like that. The first year is really tough because you need to learn what to look for and what's going to go wrong. And there are warning signs of some pieces wearing out that you don't realize until they actually break down. They're like, oh, that's why it was doing that this week. It's a whole different management style is what it is. The cows are way better off. We just retired a cow that's just shy of her 13th birthday. They live a way better life now. They don't move as much, so we're going to have cows that last longer and everything like that. So that's what's cool about it, is the cow health is so much better. Reproduction is where we saw a huge increase. They're calm, they get pregnant easier, and they're just a much more finely tuned machine. There's 120 data points taken every single milking. So, I mean, it's just information overload at times. So that first year, too, is learning what information you need to use for day-to-day operations. So there's some graphs I say I look at every day, 2-3 times a day. Some I look at monthly, some I look at biannually and annually. Because like, if you look at some of these ones that I use biannually and annually, it's information overload, and you can make management decisions that you shouldn't be making it because you're doing it too soon between intervals and such. So that's a tough part to learn, but we have a good dealership we work with, and I know enough dairymen that I can talk to that can help me through things. So
is it helpful because it's more systematic for the cows, or it's more predictable, or what is it about it that makes it easier for them?
Because actually the less time the humans spend in the barn, the better. So our last employee leaves at 10 at night and we don't come back till 4 in the morning. And that's when we get the most milk during the whole entire 24 hours. It's because nobody's in there walking around, checking them, doing whatever, scraping stalls and such. We're not interfering with the cow flow. And our fresh cows can get milked up to 6 times a day, rather the parlor it was 3 times. So good cows are getting milked 5 to 6 times a day based on production, and poor cows are twice. The cows just get to do their thing. These fully automated barns with alley scrapers or manure Roombas, Discoveries, they're even better than us. We still get the skid loader, so we're in there quite a bit. But yeah, the less time you spend in the barn, the more milk you get.
Where do you see opportunities for more robotics on the farm, either on the dairy side or the row crop side?
I think, you know, John Deere coming out with these robotic tractors is going to be huge. I've had people ask me, because they're kind of nervous to do it, I kind of to a point see, like, you can't just have one. You almost would need to buy two, because you still can't really get rid of people to a point. Like, if you have one, you still need a person managing that tractor,
right.
I feel
so
like.
So they might as well be driving it.
Yeah, yeah. So I almost think of it as a point, if you had two of them, the operator could be in another tractor, have his two automated ones he's keeping track of from his non-automated tractor. It's kind of how I look at it from that aspect. Is I'm not saying it's not a good idea, but that's my biggest concern, I guess I would say, with it is, are you actually able to just leave it go, or are you still watching it? Are you needing to pick up on the approach, watching it work? That's my number one question, I guess, going forward with that. But they're new yet. When these robots are new 20 years ago, there was a lot of questions on them too. So give the engineers of these days a couple of years, they'll have it figured out.
Boy, John Deere should hire you for sales. Like, no, you don't need one. You need two. Two of these things.
Kind of. Call me.
Well, so what about the economics of kind of flying the seat on? Was that expensive? And as you sit down with your dad and brother and look at kind of the financial aspect of it, how are you able to evaluate if it was worth it or not?
It was really cheap because they had the bin full of rye at the airport, and we paid them $8, $8.50 an acre to do it, plus the seed, and we didn't have to do anything. You know, our time is so valuable still at the farm, to where if we had to interseed it or do something ourselves, that's actually probably would be more expensive in our case. So, but if we have to go out and drill it, that's not going to take that much time for us. So the airplane worked really well. I would do it again if we were going to just combine the corn. I would still do it that August time frame, because it's just not going to get out of hand having all of September. And when we chop the silage to go wild, it's still going to stay timid for the most part in September, and it can grow a little bit in October before it freezes off. So, yeah.
In the cover crops that you've been using, so you use rye, but I think you've done some diverse mixes after wheat, right?
Yes, we have done the turnips, radish. I'm trying to think, there's two others that we did out there, and that worked really well. The biggest issue was the wheat that came back after the combine. We went and mowed it, actually, with our triple wing mower, and then just because that was so thick, we worried about that drying out, and that worked really well. We probably looked silly out there, but we still had the strips of turnips and radishes and everything. And so we are practicing with that. I think we could still do that in the future, but we didn't know what to do, if we should just take the ripper and rip that wheat up, because we knew that was going to be an issue, especially because we got the wheat off so early, so it had so much time to grow. We had grandpa in our ear, you know, saying, you got to get that dug up. So we mowed it, and it was a little wetter this spring, where the turnips and radishes was nice and dry, but the wheat was still a little bit wetter than we would like, but we managed. We planted it just fine.
And do you worry about anything with like the milk quality and the cover crops that you're using and those diverse mixes as far as like a taste coming through, or is that something you have to worry about with the dairy?
Shouldn't have to. We don't chop the rye or anything like that. We don't have the feed storage, and rye isn't high quality enough for a dairy. Anyways, triticales we could do, which would work really well, but we, like I said, the storage is kind of our biggest issue. So no, we don't worry anything about the milk quality on that aspect of using cover crops.
These are great questions. I'm glad you're here, because I wouldn't even know to ask about those. You mentioned earlier valuing your time, and I wonder, do you think having the dairy has helped you really understand the value of your time more so than if you were just farming row crops?
Yes, because there's days that it's like the dairy industry is so tough to make money in. We sit there and go, well, okay, we have this huge investment in the robot, so we're not getting out tomorrow, obviously. But it's like, could we focus more time on the grain side and make that money up being better grain farmers if we didn't have the cows to take so much of our time. You know, I'm kind of a manager. I say I get paid $15 an hour, but I said my time is worth $50. That's what farmers have to look at it, I think, from that aspect is...
As far as your value to the business, you're saying?
Yes, your value to the business. And that's what, like, I still do a lot of hands-on in the barn, cleaning barn and stuff like that. So we're looking to put alley scrapers in the barn, you know, so the time I spend doing that, I can be managing and on top of numbers and stuff like that. So it is such a number tough business. You have to spend more time doing it. And farmers tend to want to work instead, it seems like. So
what do you feel like you're still spending too much time doing it? Is it that working in the barn where you could have those alley scrapers or?
Yeah, I do think for the most part, I am mostly managing. You want the herdsman, that's like my role, to be in the barn still pushing cows to the robots, the fetch cows that don't have the robots figured out, doing your animal health just to keep on top of things. I still feed calves twice a week to make sure that the calves are doing things. So it's more like cleaning barn and stuff like that. That's a waste of my time and the farm's time. It's just kind of thrown down the toilet. That's how I look at it. So just making sure you're still managing but not wasting precious management time doing grunt work is how I would put it.
Well, you've already sort of answered, you know, kind of what's next for you when it comes to soil health as far as like kind of trying again and doing these different approaches to the cover crop. But anything else on your mind as far as what you're working towards when it comes to building healthier soils?
I would say I use Daniel and Thomas Jansky out of South Haven, Minnesota. They're dairymen too. They have four robots, and that's how we got to know them is we went to go look at their barn and we designed our barn after theirs, and they're all cover crops right now. It's impressive what they're doing. So this spring when I was running into those issues with the rye, I was on the phone with those guys like twice a week. What should I be doing? So those guys, they're a very good tool that I've found. So it's more just like picking their brain and stuff. And I would like to make a trip to their farm this summer to see some of their things in action and what they're doing and such. Those guys seem to have it figured out. But they have different soils. They have much lighter soils than we do. So that's what, talking on the phone this spring, it's like, what should I be doing, guys? And they're like, we should be doing this. I'm like, there's no way I can do this. And they're like, well, that's just your soil difference. So we're talking thick, heavy gumbo where we're at and sandier soils where they're at. So that is like maybe one of the biggest challenges of this soil health is your resources that are out there. They're maybe not used to your soil, your conditions and things like that.
All right. Well, I hope you enjoyed that chat with Brett Blackwelder. It was kind of cool to get that unique perspective of someone who's not just a farmer, but also a dairyman on the show. And I also enjoyed the comments about the robots and automation as well. Very cool. Thank you again to Brett for taking the time to speak with Abby and I at Agronomy on Ice 2023. Also, you might start to notice with this show that our cadence is going to pick up to 2 episodes per week rather than just 1. We've got a lot of great content already recorded and even more to come. So throughout the summer and really throughout probably all of the growing season this year, you're going to get 2 episodes per week from us and might be a little bit shorter in format. So the total commitment per week won't go up that much, I don't think, but some interesting stuff coming your way and stay tuned for that. A lot of exciting updates too that will lead into the next season of Soil Sense. But thank you so much to our season 6 sponsors of the show, the North Central Sustainable Agriculture Research and Education Program, the North Dakota Corn Council, the North Dakota Wheat Commission, the North Dakota Soybean Council, the North Harvest Dry Bean Association, the North Dakota Barley Council, and Anheuser-Busch. If you're getting value from this podcast, we'd always love it if you'd leave us a rating and review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or both. And please share your favorite episodes on Twitter and other social medias by using the hashtag #SoilSense. We'll be back with more great soil health content in a couple days.